right, guys, welcome to The Pulse. We told you we'd be back every week, so we're doing it again, and we are excited today. We've got a Philly guy, and I know some of you watch this nationally, but respect to the Philly guy. TV host, musician, musical director, teacher of music, but I'm going to go back to Philly guy. Kevin Eubanks joins us on The Pulse. Hello, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I was checking out your show, the opening show. Man, it was beautiful. Very nice, man.
I appreciate it. I've got this whole, you're a musical guy, so you get all this. I've got this soundboard and everything in front of me.
Right.
That I don't really know how to use. So I'm sitting here acting like I understand all this. I feel like I should hit some sort of button and there should be theme music or something playing for you when we introduce you.
That's all right. See all this stuff back here? Yeah. I call somebody that comes over and presses the buttons for me. If I want to pretend like I know what's back here, it's just a prop for this moment.
Okay, fair enough. So we're on the same page with that.
Like, are we good?
Perhaps we'll edit that part out so we can both act like we understand what's going on. But I do. I appreciate you doing this, spending some time with us on The Pulse.
I appreciate you having me.
You started smiling when I focused on Philly guy.
Yes.
That's still near and dear.
Absolutely. I've been living in L.A. for a long time now. I go back to Philly lots during the year. And my brothers, my mom, everybody, I grew up, all my friends. Philly is where it all started. Musically, everything. It's... Music that comes out of Philly, the vibe that comes out of it, you can be in different parts of the world. You're at the lobby of a hotel and you hear some music that's from Philly. It's larger and more pervasive than people might imagine. So it's great to come up with all of that, all the feeling that comes out of Philadelphia, and that gets into your music and what you're doing. So yeah, I love to get back and forth to Philly.
I don't think people get us. When you tell all of that and what Philly means and how Philly shapes you, you know, into someone, it may have shaped us into different people, but Philly definitely, it does shape you, yes?
I think it's, I always wondered about that, but I cannot remember a time where music and sports and the vibe of it, the energy, especially when you're that close to a place like New York, and you go to Philly and people are Philly. I mean, whatever that means, but it's a vibe. It's an energy that comes out. And then you start, as I got more and more into music and knowing more people, there's a vibe that comes out and you don't really realize it until you step someplace else and you Caddy sounds like Philly, or, you know, the fans, they're intense, this side or that side, but they're intense when they love you. They're intense when they're disappointed in the sports, because I grew up wanting to play third base for the Phillies. That wasn't going to happen. I wanted to play the 76ers. Not going to happen. And
just kept moving until you found something you could play.
Let me play guitar. Let me try something else. But no, it's a great feeling coming out of Philadelphia, and the heart of the people, all of that is for real. It's for real. We're not making it up.
No. People will learn. So people know you for a lot of different things, but I mean, obviously, predominantly your music. So how did that kind of, you started Settlement Music School, correct? Here in
my mother. It's a master's degree in music education and classical music. Her brother, my uncle, Ray Bryant, Tommy Bryant, they played with, you know, Lee Morgan, Coltrane, tons of people, Nancy Wilson, whole lot of people. And I didn't know that. My brother and I, Robin, we didn't know how Ray was going all around the world. My mom, she wanted to play jazz and blues too, but my grandmother, who had her own church, my brother and I were playing bass, drum, and tambourine in the church. She would not let my mom play jazz or blues. You could play classical and you can play gospel music. So music was in the family. It just grew up and grew up. It was really, we had no chance to do anything else because we were so overwhelmed with music all the time. Hearing Bach music when she's teaching lessons. She taught in public school for 35 years teaching music. So that's where we grew up in. So it was just a natural thing for us to do.
We try to inspire, and you try to inspire, you teach, you do all of that for young people. But when you kind of pattern that, you had patterns for you. Now, is that part of that message, why you're into the schools or why you're teaching or why you're actively in the community, so people can see what you're doing and think they can or know they can?
Well, when we were growing up, we're going back and forth to school, catching a bus, doing what, you know. But back then, seeing kids walking around with instruments, going back and forth to school, that was a normal thing. That was in the neighborhood. And people liked that. Everybody you ran into, they say, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep playing your music. And we're just going to school. We're like, what are they talking? You know, we're going to do it. And as you grow up, you realize that it influences neighborhoods. It influences people to see children participating in things like that. And once you get used to that, showing up on time, playing, you know, recitals at your school, things like that, we don't know the value of that, but all of that is extremely important. So when people get together, when the students come together and play a recital, people in the neighborhood come to it. All of that happens. It touches the heart of a lot of things that we kind of overlook it. And as we look back on it, we go, all of that was really what kept everything going together. We weren't thinking about, oh, I'm going to make records, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do all that. It was just something that we did, and it was normal. We did it all the time. Yeah. In Philadelphia, every part, as we were growing up, every part of town had a different band. In this neighborhood, if it was North Philly, if it was Germantown, if it was this West Philly, South, everybody had a band, and you could go that far. I used to hitchhike to go to rehearsals because I was so young, I couldn't drive.
But you could safely get around. And, you know, it's interesting because we have a Save Our Streets initiative. I mean, you're connected to Philly, so you know that there are violence issues in Philly right now. And there's also this kind of comparison or this parallel where the, in quotes, extracurriculars, music out of the schools and those types of things out of the schools. Do you believe, and you're involved in this, that making sure the music is in the schools really is one of those potential solutions?
It really disturbs me that music is not just so much into the school systems. I don't understand why it comes out. It's not just music. I don't see music in public schools as music education, or music is over here and education is over here and music is over here and history and science is over here. All of that is the same thing. Music is education. So it's not music education, it's education. And it will help you, it'll help you along and when you get into the workplace where you have to work with other people. If you start doing that when you're a child, when you're in elementary school, middle school, high school, and you get to study at school, that means you have to show up on time. You have to take direction. You have to listen to what's going on. You come together. You can see that this person, we come together and we make this music. And people come to the school to see it. It teaches you to practice, to have discipline. All of those things, you need that when you're into the workplace anyway. Whatever you go to, whatever workspace you're looking for, what you think that, oh, I want to be a writer, I want to do this, I want to be a doctor, all of that, working together and being respectful to the other person, whether it's the person that's sitting next to you playing an instrument or it's somebody you're working next to while you're working in a job that you're doing, all of that starts to become nurtured when you're a student going to school. So when I came home from school, what music did you do today? Or do you, you know, you have any science homework? Do you have all, it all was the same. It was just education.
Because and those aren't musical skills.
Want to do,
those aren't music skills. Those are life skills.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I want to talk because we could talk Philly and background and we had to give proper respect, but I want to talk career because you had have a successful musical career. And then some kind of way, tell me how this happens when you're doing the successful music thing. You and your family are doing the successful music thing. And then you end up as part of the band on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. How does that even happen? And at the time, is that career progress? Like, do you look at that and say, I can't wait to be part of the house band? Like, how does that work?
Truthfully, it never crossed my mind. I was touring. I was traveling around different continents. Just, I was a musician. I was making records. And that's what I always wanted to do. I just wanted to play music and playing with great musicians. And then a good friend of mine, Branford Marcellus, is a good friend of mine. We went to school together in Boston at Berklee College. And we were on tour together, and he comes and says, hey, man, you want to, I'm going to be doing a band at the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And, you know, why don't you come in a band with us? I said, okay. I was getting a little burnt out traveling so much all the time. So I did. And then after a while, they said, would you care to be the music director of the show? Branford was doing some other things, and Branford and I got together. We talked about it, and, you know, we were just like, yeah. He said, man, you should do it. You should do it. You should do it. I said, okay, I'll do it. I want to get back on the road. I want to get back to playing again. And 20 years later.
Yeah, right? 20 years and, later.
And it was a beautiful experience. I mean, all the different musicians that are brought together to make the band, and the people that you get to play with, all kinds of musicians that come and say, oh, we want the Tonight Show band, and all the people that you meet, a lot of everything from politicians to actors, of course, and you just learn so much.
Yeah,
you go around and we play for been to Afghanistan, Aviano Air Base in Italy, for the troops that were going in to dig up minefields in different countries. And they were 19, 20 years old. And you get to talk with all these people. You start to realize that music is kind of a backstage pass to so many things that you never, I didn't think about it at all, because I was always just count the song off. Let's rehearse. Let's play some music. And it showed me that it's like a web that touches so many other things, and it allows you to just be a part of so many different things. And you start to realize that it helps you to get to places, to understand different things in the world and within yourself. And all of that starts with, I want to play an instrument, and I'm walking down the street. And no, I never would have thought that it got to all of that.
So you started giving us a taste of all of the things that you got to do and do as a part of being associated with the band and then leading the band. What does a musical director do? Because I know you play music. I know you pull it together. But in all of the different reading that I've done, you had to do a whole bunch of stuff. You had to just come up with music. Sometimes you had to talk celebrities down like you. I don't think that was in the job description when they said, come on and be musical director.
Well, it turns out that all of it is listening, just like music is. Like we listen to each other when we're talking to each other. Sound is music. The way people express it, after a while, more and more, and you see people, they lean this way when they want to say something. They lean this way. Their facial expression, all of it is speaking to you, whether you can see it or whether you're hearing it. And when you're, especially if you're on a show like The Tonight Show, if you're working with people, and not just there, but after a while you see that is everywhere, how can I contribute to making the situation feel better? Okay. So the idea is, you know, okay, how can I use music to bring everything together? If I just go about the things that I want to hear, then you might be not listening enough. You're not contributing enough to the overall picture of what's going on. And after a while, it just turns into it. And then you kind of naturally go, well, this music will suit this because it brings everything together, makes everybody feel more comfortable what's happening. So the music becomes a glue that makes everything, brings it together, and everybody feels good about it. So you can, a lot of people will not remember what someone said, but they kind of remember more that they had a good time, they felt good, or it makes them think about it. But all of that, you do not want the music to get in the way and take them out of the moment that's happening. Now, that's one thing. If you're playing a concert, if people are there to hear the music that you play, that you create, that you did on your recordings, then you can just, you have a great band and you just go after it. You right. are, you're into it. And then you just let everything out.
It's like creating a movie soundtrack every night. Like you had to play to the mood of what was going on every night. Like I'd imagine, and you know, I don't know if you'll say it, so I'll say it. I'd imagine that's really requires a level of talent that touring may not. Touring, you can do your thing. But when you're sitting there on a show like that, you have to do the complimentary thing to everything that's going on around you.
That's an excellent point. That's really well said. you're absolutely right. So when you're in that situation, what you feel is what will make everything better? How do you bring that out? How do you, it even gets to the point if, you know, because I was doing this so long with Jay, and we're still doing it with our new yeah. show, is that when Jay's telling jokes or if a guest comes on and Jay hits punchline or, you know, when I start, you know, well, how do we do that? Am I getting in the way if I bring the music in? And how do I keep that energy, the comedic energy, moving? And after a while, you start to feel it, and you say, ooh, I can hit a chord here. I can get, you know, or Smitty Smith, great drummer, will hit cymbals or drum roll and all that. But after a while, you start to feel that's just some more music, too. The timing of it is the same thing. And after a while, I started seeing it the same. If I'm playing behind a sax player, if I'm playing in a club in New York, and the sax player is playing something, I play chords behind it. We call it comping. You do the same thing. If, you know, Jay's telling jokes and punchline comes, either, you know, I'm strumming or I'm just laughing because it's just funny. But the timing of it becomes natural. You don't really think about it here. Yeah. It's the same thing as music. You put it in as you feel it, and after a while, it just becomes a flow.
I want to talk about the current show. We'll get into that. And you probably told this story a thousand times, but they put you in there to deal with celebrities. And I'm sure there's been a lot of them, but the one that people kept asking you about was because of the status of a diva, Diana Ross.
Oh, man.
So what happened with Diana Ross?
You heard about that?
I heard about that. We do a little bit of research on the Pulse.
We're doing the, we were in, I think it was in Phoenix. Yeah, and Super Bowl was there. Diana Ross was going to be on the show because she was going to do the halftime. And I was so excited. I grew up with the Supremes. I grew up with all that. I never met Diana Ross before. I was excited. So they were getting ready to do their sound check. I'm sitting in the audience just because this is a hero for me.
Right.
And Diana Ross didn't come out. She didn't come out, and I could feel everybody getting nervous. And she's in her dressing room. And I said, Diana Ross isn't coming out. She's not coming out. I said, why are you?
Right?
I don't know.
What's that got to do with me?
Don't bring me into this. So I was going, time was running. And they finally said, Kev, could you just knock on her door and maybe see what's, you know? I said, I have no idea. I've never met Miss Ross before. I just know I love her music, and to this day, I do. And they said, could you just knock on the door? I knock on the door, and through the door, somebody says, "Who is it?" I said, "I'm Kevin, and I'm the music director here." I just and he cracks the door, and I said, "They wanted me to wonder if Miss Ross is gonna, you know, do the sound check, but really, I just want to meet Miss Ross, and I just want her autograph. That's their thing." I don't want to be in the way of anything. So they let me in, and I just said, "Miss Ross, this is an honor to me. My parents would be, oh, you were in there with Diana Ross." And I just said, "I'm supposed to come in here somehow, ask you to go on stage, but I'm, in my mind, I just wanted to meet you, and it's beautiful. Thanks you for all the music that you've done and just inspired us since I was a child. And thanks for letting me in. I appreciate it." And then I just left. I
don't know. And went back. I did my part. Like I did what I could do.
And I go out and I say, I tried. I had her autograph, so I was in heaven. And a little while after that, about 10 minutes later, she came out. So then they said, "Kevin, what did you do? What did you say to her?" I just said she's a hero to me, and please, I'm just so happy to meet you. I said, that's all I said to her.
You were just real.
I was going to go in there and ask Ms. Ross something, or like, I'm going to give her some direction. You must be crazy. I'm not saying anything like that. I just had an opportunity to meet her in person, which I've always wanted. But it all turned out just fine.
It worked out just fine, and you get to take credit for that. You should have told them. I went in there and told her, look, nobody would have bought that. But what's interesting about it.
I'm surprised you heard about that. That's deep.
We do our thing. It is interesting because, and obviously on a different level, but the type of people that you interact with daily. And you tell me, because I've found it to some extent, people are so used to people not being just real and humble and genuinely interested in meeting them or treating them some different way, that you tend to get a really positive response with people when you're just real. Like, it's like, listen, I ain't coming here to tell you nothing. I just love you, Miss Ross. You know, and just be respectful.
That's it. And that opportunity is larger and deeper when you meet so many people that have done so much, and a lot of people you never meet that are doing so much as well. So just real quickly, when I'm coming up in Brooklyn, I'm in Fort Greene, I'm living in an apartment, it's a terrible apartment, and I'm doing tours, I'm starting to make records, and I'm still, you know, trying to figure out how come I can't pay my rent? How come I can't, you know, I'm doing, you know, what's going on? And he's a friend of mine now, at the time, I met this bass player named Avery Sharp, played with McCoy Tyner for like 30 years. So I just said, Avery, he says, "Oh, Kevin, you're the guitar player." I said, "Yeah, bass player, right?" He said, "Yeah." I said, you know, so we started talking. I said, "Listen, man, you have 3 kids, you play bass, your wife is a registered nurse, you own your house. What do you know that I don't know?" Because I'm struggling with this one-bedroom apartment that is terrible, and I'm chucking it back and forth on the subway, and you have 3 kids
house
playing bass. I said, "You know something I don't. Can you impart something to me?" And he said, "Really, man?" I said, "Very real. I'm just, you know." And we started talking. We became friends, and he said, "Save that, get your first house, get to this, get to that, blah, blah." And I did what he said. And from that, I learned when I go to different conferences, when I run into people, you and I hope we run into each other in Philly, and because I'm going to ask you some things. Look, how you become such a journalist, at the same time, get some meatiness out of the conversation, and at the same time, people are feeling good or feel like they're inspired by something that they hear you talk about it, or somebody answers a question, the right question that you ask someone, And I would say that would help me get do interviews. So one day, maybe in Philly, we can
You're in Philly, we'll do that. We will connect.
Because people know things.
Yeah.
And because I was always really shy, but from going to Hollywood and meeting everybody. And so now I have no problem going up to people and say, excuse me, I don't know you. I'm not a stalker, but, you know something that I don't. Is there something that you can impart to me you think I should know about this situation or depending on who the person is? And people will teach you. Yeah, you'll learn from them.
I feel like that's a lesson, man. That's a life lesson. All right, we've talked this much time, have not mentioned You Bet Your Life. So
there you
my bad. There's this TV show that you're on. You and Jay Leno doing it. What was really interesting to me though is that your initial relationship was musically based, right? That's what you were doing with the Tonight Show. And now you're co-host,
right.
So did that just happen naturally? Like, no, there's no instrument. There's no responding to the theme musically. You're just co-hosting a show on a national platform. Now, was that a smooth transition?
It was something I had to get used to in my head. I called my friends back in Philly. I said, man, I'm going to do this, this show. And it doesn't feel like a band should be there. It doesn't feel like I should be playing. I think being a co-host might be what the show really needs, but I was so used to being in front of a camera with the guitar that it was a little bit weird to get into it. And I'm thankful to the people that are directing the show, and they left it up to me. I said, well, if you really feel that you want to have the guitar, then you decide, which is very respectful of them to put it that way. And I called my friend Jerry back home. We grew up together playing in bands next door to each other. That's how we met. And I said, Jerry, man, it feels weird. I can keep the guitar, but something is feeling that, he said, Kev, put the guitar down. Just become a good co-host.
Yeah.
Said, give him a great theme song. Give him a theme song. That's the music you need for that. Come up with a great song that, embodies the show, keeps the beat going, keeps everything that, and get up there and be a co-host. Learn something else. Take another step. So you're not pulling yourself back. They're offering you an opportunity to step up and become a co-host and learn some more stuff. Jerry, thanks, man. The Eagles got to win tomorrow. We know it. We changed. We just jump right into
it. Keep it
thanks,
moving.
Jerry. Oh man, we got to get to the play. So I went with it like that, and
they were cool with that. Like they were cool with you. Just came to the table. You're like, you know what? I'm over this whole musical director thing. I don't need the guitar. We're gonna co-host the show, and everybody. I mean, that's a tremendous level of respect. That people were like, all right.
Right. So I'm just in a situation to learn something else.
Yeah.
And then I talk to other people and say, as a co-host, as this, I talk to people that do that. I talk to people that can help me. People know things. And if you ask them, you read books, you read this, you see things on, you learn from television, you learn from a lot of things. People know things. Everybody has gone through things in their life with their families, with this. People know things, and I attribute a lot to people, and I have no problem. Like a question out that I'll ask you, don't have to ask you right now, but when we hang out in Philly, so Bill, give me the title of your favorite book. And I know it's going to be good. If you ask anybody what's their favorite book, I used to go into bookstores, and I wanted to read something that's not in my wheelhouse, an author I never heard of or something, but I don't want to get a third through the book and say, I'm not feeling this.
Yeah.
So, but if you ask someone with respect, I'm not stalking you, I'm just, could you tell me the title of your favorite book? Anybody that has a favorite book is going to be a good book. And you learn something that's out of what you wouldn't even think. You never heard of the book, the title. And because the experiences that that person has gone through, and this book is their favorite book, because everybody has to go through things in life.
Yeah.
We're human beings. And they give you the title of their favorite book. It's going to be a good book. People know stuff. People feel things. So all of that just comes together wherever you are, whether you're on stage, whether it's a TV stage, whether it's a music stage, whether it's a classroom, whether you're doing a, you're at a university and you're doing master classes with people, respect what the other people are going through. Even if you're there as supposedly the teacher, you have to connect with them and understand that they're going through things too. So all of it after a while becomes similar in the way you can contribute to the situation.
Yeah, I feel like that is kind of the foundation. And who knows if I am good at this, but I think that part of the foundation, I think that quotes, and I'm a big quote guy, but to be a good leader, you have to be comfortable being a solid follower. You know, and so you have to be willing to learn from other people. You have to be willing to let other people lead. You have to be willing to listen, you know, to their experiences and let the conversation be about them, you know, and not necessarily about you. I think those are life lessons, and I guess they're music lessons, but they're certainly host lessons.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I hope. I'm going to ask you a question, and, you know, I guess you'll answer it, or maybe you won't. You know, that's okay.
Should I be warned?
No. Listen, because we could just edit it out if it wasn't. So it's you and Jay Leno have been together for years. Like, you've been doing different shows for years now. And in theory, he could have gone and gotten a whole lot of people, you know, to join him on that show. You guys seem like you're just legitimately cool. Like, you're cameras aside, show aside, you guys just clicked. Like, you're legitimately friends.
Right,
is that now, I don't imagine you'd tell me, no, I don't really like that guy. I mean, we just did that for TV. But it feels real. Like, is that, like, that's a real relationship that's developed over those years?
It's something that has definitely just grown and grown and grown into that, and we work well together. I really like working with Jay, and you learn from situations, and at the same time, you don't force it. It just becomes something, and after a while, when it really starts to gel, there's a certain amount of just kind of natural trust that has to happen. So if you're on a stage with someone and you're sharing it, then you have to trust the other person. And after a while, it just becomes like, if you become friends with someone, I mean, at what point, you know, friends that you have, mm-hmm. at what point does that person become your friend? I mean, can you tell me the time and the date and then when it actually happens? You look back on it and you realize, oh, that's a friend. Or that's a musician that I play easily with. Or you make the most, using the least amount of energy, and you get the most out of it. It's just a natural flow that happens. And after a while, you get used to it. It becomes your habit. You know each other's movement. You know. And after a while, it's this. For me, I look at everything at being in a good band. After a while, you kind of know what the person is leaning towards this way. And in the day that this person has a lot of energy. And so I pull back. He's on today. Just let it go. Sometimes if I'm in the band and the drummer is killing it, I just go, I'm not going to. Listen to Smitty Smith. And so all of that just keeps going and going with when I'm working with Jay. After this longer time, we know a lot about each other. We respect each other. And it just flows and it just flows. And you can't remember exactly when that actually happened. There wasn't a textbook that you can go to. We just try to contribute to what's going on, and it just rolls and rolls and rolls. And I don't really second guess it. I just flow with it and try to contribute to what's happening. And it just goes on and on. So
yeah, no pressure at all. Just letting it flow in front of millions of people. Yeah, just go with it. it's all good. I'm on board. Couple more things as we try to inspire on the Pulse. You've shared a lot of it, but if you had to put your finger on best advice you've gotten.
Wow. There's so much. I guess the main thing is, I mean, I would hear my grandmother saying, go with your first mind. And I didn't know what that was for a long time. What, do I have a second one back here? Go with your first mind, which means your instinct. And if you're in a situation, and whether it's a younger person, your age, older, whatever, you have to believe that there's a positive energy that's coming out, and you want to connect with that positive energy. It may not be the same way you would look at something, the way that person does. And I try to embrace what is positive first. Like, you're cool until you're not cool. Then you get in situations where you get taken advantage of because you think, you're cool until you're not cool. And then you get in a situation like, maybe I need to temper that a little bit.
You really weren't that cool.
Yeah, it's like not as cool as I thought it was going to be. So after a while, you kind of have to morph into that and take care of the situation, blah, blah. But at the same time, start to, your instinct is so important. And you have to, after a while, you have to believe in your instinct, but not trying to force it this way or that way. And as a musician, you have to do that whether you're playing with this person, that person. And after a while, I started seeing everything in the guise of a band. DJ and I have a band, just the two of us. No music, it's just a way of saying it. So I think one of the main things, go with your first mind, which is your instinct, but don't be egotistical about it. Don't force it. Be honest. And this is tough. It's tough for me. Be honest with yourself. Not what you want, but what's needed. And let your instinct flow. And after a while, you start to, well, I'm not speaking for anyone else. But after a while, you start to go, my instinct, now I got a feel for what my instinct is. And or say, I'm not feeling anything. I need more information. I don't know what's going on. But after a while, said, no, do this because I'm feeling my instinct. You can't write on a piece of paper. You can't say this is exactly what it is. While you get to feel that and you're not being egotistical about it, it's just something in you. And after a while, you start leaning on it and say, no, this person is this. Or if I'm doing this job, my dad used to always say, once a job is, you got to do it.
Iyanla says she was guided. Iyanla Van Zant was on and had a similar message. She said that she is guided and she follows that path because when she was making the decisions, it wasn't working out so well. So when she started following the path or the instinct is when things started going in the right direction.
Right. And that's in people. And you have to, after a while, you start to lean on it. You start to have confidence in your instincts. And get your ego mind out of the way just long enough so you can feel that, okay, this is it. Sometimes I walk in the room and go, I don't know.
It's time to get out of that room.
I'm going to let this one go.
I got one more. We end every show with the concept of using your voice for good. So is there something that you're focused on right now? Is there a group you're working with, a nonprofit, something that you want people to know about, or just something that is front of mind for you in terms of helping people right now?
Well, that's an excellent question because it goes so many different things, but you want to bring it into a focal point. And I tend to want to connect with things, not judge them, but connect with it so I can see it first. Mm-hmm. So I think having an objective mind it helps me decide whether or not it's something I want to get involved in. I want to put energy into it. But when it's time to commit to something, do it from your heart. Mm-hmm. And once you feel it in your heart, your contribution may not be particularly what is wanted, but the feeling that you get, it will be inspiring no matter what. So if you're going to do something, touch it from your heart. Okay. Not because it's over here, it's this, it's that, because we get inundated with so many different things that we want. But what we need is a connection from your heart. And you can tell right away if this is a good situation or not situation. I mean, that's kind of simply put, but I think to walk into a room and bring something to the room, and then that will attract other people towards you that you can connect together, and then it grows, and then it grows, and then it grows, and it's something that makes you feel like you're part of something now. And before you know it, you're on a path that feels good, and you start to go, oh, this is enriching. And what did you do? You just brought it from your heart. It tells you what to do, as long as you can kind of understand what your heart is telling you, yeah. Not about what you want, but what your heart is telling you and what you need. You want your needs or your wants?
I want both, but I appreciate the inspiration behind it. That's it. That's what we got. Kevin Eubanks, I appreciate you taking some time with us. So the next time we connect, I'm going to learn how to use this soundboard and stuff in front of me. You figure out how to use all that, those nice props that you got behind you. And I think that we'll both be better at our job for it. So
it's been a pleasure. And I had some questions for you, maybe sometime when we're kicking it. This is something I want to ask you about the life of a journalist. I mean, you know, you get to ask, you know, you're there for a reason. You're doing this. You're enlightening people to what's happening. To me, that's music. You want to touch people with what's happening. You know, you want to engage people. At the same time, you want people to leave with something more than when they came for. It's the same kind of thing. So when I'm reading different books, and I watch people interviewing people, and as it gets deeper and deeper, no, this isn't softy stuff. This is real stuff. This is real that, you know. Yeah. How do we do that with, you know, at the same time embracing everything at the same? That is a that's a thin line, you know.
Yeah.
And you must have, you know, I'm getting ready to say it to you. You must have something that you can impart with me. I mean, I get on people's nerves with that.
Oh, you know what, man? I do. And I, like you, I learn from all the people that I'm interacting with.
Right.
And I quote Iyanla a lot because she's an inspiration and she's a family friend.
Right.
But Iyanla said that the truth and honesty doesn't need any defense. And so if you are asking people things from a sincere, and you talked about leading with your heart, if you're asking people things, I believe, from a sincere place that's based on the search for an honest answer, you know, not some sort of leading or guiding or directing or having your agenda, you know, an honest discussion about the truth doesn't need all the extra rhetoric and defense, you know, if you're doing it for the right reasons. And I hope that's something that both of us are trying to do.
Right. I mean, and I think that in a nutshell, it's a small phrase, but it's huge. And you know when it's time to, like, okay, I'm out of here. Yeah. Or, oh, I have something I can contribute to this and learn something from this, I'll be here. But when you from your heart, and you can say, and your first mind, you go, look, you got your heart and you got your first mind. If you just touch those things, you know whether to stay or to leave, you know, or this is going to be positive and you want to be around this negativity, that's up to you. But you have this inside of you. I mean, exactly what you just said. I mean, if you know, you know, as a song called, you know.
I appreciate you. Since you took the co-host job, man, I'm going to start taking some lessons. So if y'all need a house band, holla at your boy. By the next time we talk, I'm going to know how to play something. We'll come together. Seriously, man, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking this much time.
I appreciate it, and thank you what you do, man. The journalists and all that, thank you for what you do too, man. It's nice, man. It's good to see it.
We will be watching. I'll talk to you soon. Let me know when you're in Philly.
E-A-G-L-E-S.
Take care, man. Have a good one.
Peace, man. Take care, bro. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson, today with Kevin Eubanks. I enjoyed it because you got a chance to hear so much more about his experiences behind the scenes. I didn't know all the things that Kevin has dealt with. I didn't know all of the roles that he filled, and I didn't know how inspired he was by his time as a child in Philadelphia, how he grew from that, his importance or the importance that he places on music in the school. So I really enjoyed the opportunity to spend some time with him, and I look forward to doing it again next week. Remember that if you want to see The Pulse on TV, if you're in Philadelphia, you can watch on Fox 29. Nationally, you can stream it on Fox Soul. Again, we'll be back next week. And if you have any suggestions, comments, things that you would like us to focus on, you can always follow me on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. Thanks so much for listening to The Pulse.